Karen, when you take people down to the islands, what do you do with them there?
Well, we fly into ADAC, and we ADAC right now was one of the biggest bases in the Aleutians during the campaign. It is now mostly the remnants of a Cold War base. I think ADAC only has a population of maybe 100 and some people year-round. So we take them around the Cold War base, and then we get on a 72-foot marine vessel, and we start sailing towards Kiska and Attu, and we get skiffed on shore, and we spend the day hiking the old remnants of the bases.
Right. So
and the Japanese on Kiska have all their guns, most of their guns they left behind, still in position. They're still there. We see a lot of Japanese tunnel systems that are still standing, brilliantly constructed. The craftsmanship in them is actually quite remarkable. We go to the old Marston matting runways that are still there. We still find bombs, grenades, bullets, you name it.
Wow.
And we teach people about what happened up there.
Yeah, Bob, in reading some of the material about when you were there, they talked about the Japanese going up in the mountains. Did they go up in the mountains? Or Karen, jump on this if you want. But would they do that to avoid being hit or the base being hit? Why would they go up in the mountains?
Better vantage point.
Ah.
Now, whenever you're looking down on somebody, you have much better vantage point.
Yeah.
So as the troops are landing and walking through the valley, they were stationed on either side, well dug in, because they had been there for a year by the time Americans landed on Attu.
Right. So you never, flying your airplanes with your buddies, you never attacked the Japanese bases?
Well, the 11th and the 18th, which I'd been in, were, but I got right before they moved down to Amchitka, which was just east of Kiska, to do that, I was transferred back up to Anchorage to start the new squadron, so I missed it. But then when we went out at 2, there was the Japanese had landed in three different places on the north side of At 2. But there's no front line. There's white-covered, rugged mountain peaks. The peaks weren't over 2,500 feet, maybe 3,000 feet high at the most. But there was no front lines. And the winds up there, like here the winds are blowing here, and that end of the stands, the winds are blowing it this way. So you could drop smoke to identify. So we were no help to them.
Yeah,
so
they couldn't see.
But I'll tell you, this young lady, Karen, is amazing. She works with the National Park Service up there in Alaska. She's made more trips up and down there and on boat, taking 3-week trips, leading expeditions, working with Japanese people from Japan who are recording their part in the activities up there. And she's an amazing woman from what she's done. I take my hat off to her and what she's doing.
Well, I do that so that I can tell the story of those who served. So I take my hat off equally to you and all your comrades.
Yeah. What? What's it like, Karen, for you to, you know, with your grandfather's experience and him not talking about any of this, mm-hmm. and then you digging all this information out, what's it like for you to meet Bob and hear all of this firsthand from somebody who was flying with your grandfather?
No, it's emotional. It's great. It reassures me at the as to the path it's that I'm on and the why I do what I do. Yeah. My grandfather always felt like the Aleutian campaign was a forgotten about item in World War II history from the Canadian side. But there's a lot of American veterans who feel the same way. So I get to hear Bob's story, and then I get to repeat them and just speak for them when they don't have a voice for themselves, or especially for the ones who have passed on.
Bob, when did you leave Alaska?
September of 43. Of the 8 pilots I took out there, 6 in aircraft and 2 in spares, a year later, 5 of them were dead due to accidents in combat.
And where did you go next?
I went to Richmond, Virginia, and checked out P-47s, got a P-47 outfit, moved up to Andrews Air Force Base to train them, and that was Camp Springs Army Airfield then, and we were all packed to go overseas, trucks packed, airplanes ready, and said goodbye to the family. And we were leaving the next morning for a port call and got a telegram that night saying, stop, don't go to the port. We don't want any more organizations over here. Send us all your second lieutenants that are qualified in P-47s and stay there and you'll be a replacement unit. So I never got to go over there either.
And what about the rest of your career? You flew a lot of airplanes.
I was first pilot in 18 different aircraft. I flew every fighter the Air Force had, from a P-36, P-38, P-39, P-40, P-47, P-51, and F-86 jet, and about 18 different types of aircraft.
What was the experience after flying all these propeller-driven reciprocal engine planes? What was it like to crawl into an F-86 and fly it?
Well, it's different in a way. You know, somebody asked me the other day, it seemed like it's mechanical because you took off with maybe 800 gallons of fuel. You used 200 gallons to get the altitude up in the 20, 27,000 feet. You used 400 gallons to cruise, 200 gallons for a landing in round figures, and no matter what altitude you at your landing base, you start at 20,000 feet, made a penetration of 5,000 feet a minute to land, and that was every time entirely different than what you do in a propeller airplane.
Right.
But it was great. Your headwinds had less effect on you due to your speed, so you were hitting your ETAs usually a minute, maybe half a minute right along.
What goes through your mind when you think back in detail about that experience of that time you spent in Alaska?
Well, I have a lot of memories of a lot of great guys. I do about 6 talks a year, have from 15 years or more, and I tell the stories, their names, and how they were, but there's nothing like the camaraderie of a fighter squadron where you got guys, whether I'm part of it or the leader of it, that are together, will go anywhere, follow their leader, and you take them there and you bring them back safe. There's just nothing like it in this world. I found downhill skiing is maybe sort of comparable, the most thing comparable to flying a fighter airplane. Yeah, but yesterday, I seen people do things in an airplane I didn't know an airplane could do.
Welcome to Oshkosh, right? Ladies and gentlemen, Lieutenant Colonel Bob Brattlehurst and Karen Abel, thank you both very much.
Well, thank you, David. Thank you, sir. Thank Karen.